Okay, we continue in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Chaf, Pasuk Lamed. And we're now up to the point where David is not at the Rosh Chodesh meal. And on the second day, Shaul is asking Yonason, where is he? And Yonason said, I gave him permission to go to a family simcha. Now we're going to see Shaul's reaction in Pasuk Lamed. Vayichar af Shaul b'Yonason. Shaul got angry at Yonason. Vayomer lo, and he says to him, and the next three words are very difficult, and the commentators have a lot to say on this. Ben Na'avas Hamardus. You are the son of Na'avas, which we'll explain. Hamardus, which simply means of rebellion. Some kind of rebellious son. We'll see, we'll explain. Hello, Yadati, don't I know? Ki bocher atol ven yishai levoshtecha. That you have chosen the son of Ishai to become an embarrassment for you and for an embarrassment of the intimacy of your mother. What is that supposed to mean? So we'll start with the Malbim. The Malbim explains, is that where we want to start? Yeah. So he says, this is an analogy for when you're looking at rebellion. When do you typically get a rebellion from a king? So, in theory, he says, the normal way rebellion is that a servant rebels against his master in order to throw off the yoke from the master and to reign in his place. You don't like a king. You want to throw off his yoke. You rebel. You want to be the king. You rebel. But nobody rebels, and even a son would rebel against a father if he just, you know, power hungry. As we'll see, Avshalom does the same thing to David later on. That we understand. But for a son to rebel against the father so that somebody else should take over the kingdom, so if that would happen, we would call that a rebellion of lunacy. Doesn't make any sense. Why should a son rebel against his father so that somebody else should become the king? So that's what he's saying. You are having a rebellion that is na'avas hamardus, which is a meshugan rebellion. It's a crazy rebellion. Doesn't make sense, your rebellion. And that's what he's saying. And I know that you have chosen Ben Yishai over me, and therefore to rebel against me, and you should know this is going to be a shame for you and a shame for your mother, because now the kingdom will go away from her lineage and go to somebody else. So that's the way the Malbim learns it. It's crazy what you're doing. Doesn't make any sense. You didn't like me. You want to at least be the king afterwards. Okay, I understand. So it shows, I don't even begin to understand what is the purpose of what your rebellion is all about. That's one interpretation. The Ralbag gives us a few other interpretations. The Ralbag says that it's lacking ethics. Well, he has a sense of distorted ethics. And he's using the word mardus as a definition of the word ethics, of a distortion, not of rebellion. Normally, martyrs from merit can mean rebellion, but it's going to be in terms of ethics, distorted ethics. He calls this me'uvas hamusar. He says, as if to say that that your mother did not rebuke you enough when you were a child, and therefore you're not being able to hear and live by Musar properly. And that's what, for example, it says an example when it was an expression of Talmud, if you recall, we learned in the Rambam, when you give rabbinic lashes, it's called Makas Mardus. Makas Mardus. So what does the word Mardus mean over there? It means Musar. Musar. We give them the lashes, not because biblically you're supposed to get lashes, but it's a Musar that the person has to learn from that and develop a certain ethics.
Correction.
Yeah. So therefore he's saying, you know, you're lacking in this musar. because you probably didn't get enough when you were young. And therefore, you know, what you're doing is just not an ethical thing to do. And therefore, that's an embarrassment to you, and it's an embarrassment to your mother. Then he gives the other interpretation, that Marduk can mean out and out rebellion. And he likes that shot better. Meaning to say that he really is the son of a woman who isn't really fit for royalty. So therefore it's like an insult to the mother and an insult to him. But others will develop this a little bit more. Let's take a look at another commentary. Let's take a look at the Metzudas David. Metzudas David says, Navas Amardus. He says, just like your mother has been influenced to rebel against me. In other words, he had a mother, he had a wife, it was maybe a henpecked husband or whatever. The wife rebelled against her husband, which is me. So you're like her son, just like her, to rebel against as well. Obviously, he probably didn't have such an easygoing wife. And again, if you're a humble guy, right? He was a modest guy. You could have a wife who's not so humble, right? And now I see that you've chosen Ben Yishai instead of me, and that's going to be your embarrassment, an embarrassment for your mother. But people are going to say, why is this guy rebelling against his father? It must be he's not really his father. That his mother had the child from another man. And since he's not really his father, he's rebelling against his father. So it's an embarrassment to me, to you, and it's an embarrassment to your mother. Because people are going to say that your mother was not a moral person. And, who knows if maybe he was suspicious of that. Because after all, why would a person do that? Why would a son go against a father? We'll see with Dov and Avshalom, you know, the wife of the mother of Avshalom was also not a regular woman, as we'll see. So there's now either people will say or maybe he himself really thinks, you know, what kind of wife did I have? She always was bossing me around. And she probably went and got involved in other affairs, and that's why he's not really my kid. And so you're going to cause a lot of embarrassment for yourself. Okay, so listen, it could be a combination of all these interpretations put together. I don't think any of the ones are mutually exclusive of his others. Now, Rashi gives us one last commentary to look at. Na'avas hamardus. He uses na'va from the word Lashon na'venad, to move around. In other words, your mother, similar to the Mitzvah of it, your mother was a Yatsonis. Your mother was very outgoing. And how outgoing was she? So Hamardus, and this is what's causing why she is worthy of getting Musar. Your mother should get Musar. Nava Samardus, an outgoing woman. Nava, who's outgoing, Hamardus, who really needed a little bit more Musar in her life. And you'll see where this fits in the Dover Acher. If you recall, when the tribe of Binyamin didn't have any women to marry after the Pelegesh Begiva incident, they had no one to marry. So what did they say? They would go to the daughters of Shiloh as they were out in the vineyards and to grab the girls in the vineyards. So now Shaul is from Sheva Binyamin. Let's not forget. So Shaul was one of these men who did not have a wife. Shaul, we know, is the humble guy. He was too introverted to go and catch a wife. You know, the other guys are grabbing wives in the field. Shaul isn't doing anything. So guess what? Shaul's future wife sees him standing around on the sides of vineyards, and she goes herself and has the chutzpah to run after him and catch him. So Nava's also from the expression of krumim, of vineyards. So you know, in other words, that's the kind of mother you had. She, you know, there's words for women like that. And your mother was such a person. So you know, you're pretty similar to your mother. You know, she's pretty forward and no shame. You don't have much shame either. I'm your father. You know, you gotta show some loyalty to the family here. And you have the same characteristics.
What was the problem that he gave? Jonathan gave him permission not to come to this. That's the problem.
The whole thing. Shaul doesn't understand how they're good friends. How can? Let me ask you a question. Don't we have times where parents, where an adult is in an argument with an adult, right? Right. And now the parent will say to the son, you know, we don't talk to these people.
Oh, I see.
The Hatfields and the McCoys. I'm talking, stay away from this family. It's a bad family. The father's a ganav. And you know, can you imagine what kind of kids he's got? And so usually these fights spread. It's not just between parent and parent. It becomes children against children. And to a certain degree, the parents have a certain expectation. They want the children to be loyal.
Right.
They want the children to be loyal. That, you know, you take your family's side. That's not unusual. I mean, it's not right, but it's not unusual. You know, you say, you know, especially if you're dealing with business, family business, and the kingdom is no less than a family business. So this guy wants to hurt the family. And the family has to stay together. And what are you befriending him for?
That was percolating in Shaul's mind, because actually all he did is say, okay, you can go to your family because you have a sympathy. So it's not such a...
Okay, but it's again, they were such good friends. You know, it just, you know, they must have been hanging around together a lot, all these things. And this is just another indication. What do you give him permission for? He's a wanted man. I wanted to kill him. As far as he's concerned now, he's public enemy number one. So you're helping public enemy number one? What's going on over here? So you're foolish and this and that, and you have the same qualities of your mother, who was a yatsonis, forward. And you're pretty forward in terms of what you're doing over here. That's interesting, coincidentally or not, when we talk about the sons of Shimon, way back in Sefer Bereishis, one of the children, no confuse here, just coincidence, son of Shimon was Shaul ben Haknanis. That's not the same Shaul. It can't be the same Shaul. But the interesting, it's called Shaul ben Haknanis. Shaul, Shimon's son, was Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. How would he marry a Canaanite woman? So what does Rashi say there? Who's the Canaanite woman? Dina. Because Dina was raped by a Canaanite. And according to one Medrash, Shimon was the brother who would marry her. After that. So again, you see that the first time Shaul's name is mentioned is regarding the son of a Canaanis who's a forward woman. And Dina was called a Yatsonis, was called a forward woman. And Leah was called a Yatsonis.
Brother could marry his sister?
In those days, before the Torah was given. That's all question. How did the 12 tribes, who did they marry? What from girls were there to marry? There were no from Mishpachas. Avram could find one woman. Yitzchak could find one woman. Yaakov could find one woman. And right, but now how, 12 boys? Where are they going to find 12 people? So one opinion says they married, either twin sisters or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a side point. But what's interesting here, is that you see that Binyamin is from a family of Binyamin comes from Rachel, and Rachel is tsnua, is modest, right? So that's the kind of traits, family traits, Shaul, as we see, has the same. He's tsnua, he's modest, and very different to Leah, right? Rachel represents modesty. Leah represents yatsonis, being more forward. So he's saying, this is where you're going to see, this is where you see issues again. Wherever it's hard for Shaul, Hashem makes it harder. Like so it appears that Shaul has a certain personality type. He is a sonua, he's modest, he's humble, right? And he marries a wife, so you can see his shidduch. He marries a wife who's a yatsonis, who's the opposite, you know? And moreover, that's difficult enough to learn how to get along with a wife that's a different personality. And now it appears, the way that we're explaining Yonasan manifests these traits, more Leah type of traits, which is not like his father, which is not the family traits, as it were. So father and son are going to have a lot of conflict. If the one is a tsanua and the other is yatsonis, it's hard to get along as well. So it just amplifies the troubles that Yonah. It's bad enough, you know, if you're a father, you're a king, and you got this guy that you've lost the kingship, right? And the hope was maybe it'll be my son. It didn't remember. The Navi never said who's going to be the next king. So, okay, it's comforting to know I can't be the king. My son will be the king. And now I see my son is giving it to David. And already he's heard a lot of Lashon Hara about David, as we explained yesterday. So David is clearly in Shaul's mind not worthy to be the king. And I got my son, who really is a big tzaddik. Yonasan is a tzaddik in his own right, and in many ways could be a king too. He sees a lot of good qualities in Yonasan. Remember, how do we know? What's another example of Yonasan being Yetzanis? Remember when they had the war against the Plishtim, and they didn't know what to do, and Yonasan took the one lad with him, and they went and made a surprise attack? That's not a humble guy. Right? So he's a warrior. So it's different personality traits to me, but at least maybe he could take over one day. And now what's happening that he is friends with David, and like he kind of shows me, oh, how he's being misled, how this Russia is misleading my son. And now you're helping him? So you can understand why he's getting upset with his own son. Now, Reb Tzadok picks up on something that one of you guys mentioned, I don't remember, I know it came from this side. if you look, how is Shaul referring to David as? Ben Yishai, you'll see it in this pasuk, you'll see it in the next pasuk, Lamed Aleph. It's called Ben Yishai. And he doesn't call him David. So on a simple level, you would say, you know, when a person really hates somebody, they don't even want to call him by name. They don't want to call him by name. You know, Ben Yishai, it's kind of a negative term. You know, he's an adult. You know, if your kid's 5 and 6 year old, okay, you say he's Schwartz's son, right? Well, the guy's ready. David must be at least in his late 20s to call him Schwartz's son. That's like very insulting. So that'll be a simple shot. But Reb Tzadok says a lot deeper than this. David, in truth, had two good things going for him. Number one, he was the son of Yishai, and his father Yishai had tremendous traits. He was a tzaddik who never sinned in once in his life. And David had different traits on his own. Very emotional type of person in a good way, and a person who's very forward and, you know, can do a lot of things. So David carried his father, you know, and we call him at the, how do we say in Yishtabach, you know, David ben Yishai, Avdecha Meshichecha. David, the son of Yishai. There's two good things going for David. And that's the way it should be. You want to have Yichus of a tzaddik, and you're a tzaddik. And that's a wonderful thing. But Shaul always called him Ben Yishai. Why? Because he thought that the only virtue David had was his father's virtues. But he didn't have his own virtues. So Ben Yishai, yeah, his father was a big tzaddik. Right? And he's saying that, okay, you know, I understand he was Ben Yishai. But David doesn't really have anything. And that's why he calls him Ben Yishai. And obviously, if they're different qualities than what Shaul had, he wouldn't look at it as a virtue. A lot of people have trouble getting along with different personalities. And many times we look at people with different personalities, not as, okay, he's got some wonderfully different personalities than me, but it's not a good personality. If it's different, it's bad. So he's looking at David with his incredibly great new midos that are new to Klal Yisrael. And he's like, this isn't the way we do things. If the original king was picked as a humble person, then that should be an attribute for all kings. And this is what I had, you know, restraint and all, you know, what's the hallmark of the family of Rachel? Restraint, not giving into sins, never sinning. It's Yosef, right? Now he's seeing in David different qualities. So he's not even seeing them as qualities. The only qualities he can see is, I can't argue, he has a father who's a tzaddik. So that's all he is. He's a father of the tzaddik, and he's carrying that greatness. And remember, you know, we have never gone through that piece from Elio Kitov, which we have to do it one time. But, you know, David was the focal point of all kinds of Lashon Hara, not just from Doeg, but his whole family spoke Lashon Hara about him. Because there was a lot of concern that David's mother had him out of wedlock. There's a lot of concern about that. And it wasn't true, but there was a lot of evidence that would seem to support that.
His father was a tzaddik,
but the mother, it's a whole story. I don't have time right now. It would take me an hour to go through it. We'll do it one time. Bekitzer, he was such a big tzaddik, so after he had his seven kids, he was afraid. He was afraid that maybe, after all, he wasn't Jewish, Yisha. He was a descendant of Rus. So he thought he wasn't, you know, at the older age, he's doing tshuva, right? Maybe my grandmother wasn't Jewish. So then I'm not allowed to live with my wife. So he told his wife, in all piety, I think we shouldn't be together anymore. You know, I'm afraid. But on the other hand, and remember, he's a tzaddik. On the other hand, if I'm without a woman, I'm a sinner. So he goes to one of the maidservants and he conditionally frees her and says, if I'm not really Jewish, I'm going to be married to you as a goy to a goy. And if I am Jewish, I free you on condition that you're a free person, and I'll live with you as a Jew to a Jew. Right? So, the maidservant felt bad for the wife of Yishai, and without telling Yishai, so on the wedding night, he told the wife to switch. And Yishai was never the wiser. And from that, she became pregnant. So everyone was clearly thought that this pregnancy was out of wedlock, and that was David. Yeah. Okay, so now they think, oh, this is the kid born out of wedlock. So he was always treated as a second-hand child. And therefore, if anything happened that was bad in the family, let's say, so therefore he was relegated to watch the sheep. If anything happened with the sheep, he's always blamed for all the faults that happened. There's a lot to talk about. David is the most misunderstood personality in Jewish history. And he was, you know, like any public figure, like any rabbi, the most maligned from all people around. And people only complained about David HaMelech 24/7, from beginning to end of his life, 24/7. And especially then, when we'll see that he does the quote-unquote sin with Bathsheba, everyone's, you know, licking their chops that now they can really go after David HaMelech, right? You know, and Shaul wasn't the only one to fall victim to the Lashon Hara about David HaMelech. So now I say, this is a bad guy. You know, and don't you think he did some investigating? He says, you know, even his brothers aren't that happy with him. Remember we said the brother was blaming him? Why are you coming this time? Why did you leave the sheep behind? So he probably did some snooping around. He says, listen, even his brothers thinks he's not such a great guy. So now you of all people are helping him out? What's the matter with you? Father would be very upset. How would you like it if, let's say, you know, somebody opens up a competition right across from you? Right across from you, right? And trying to do you under, right? It's your parnasa now, right? Serious, yeah? Wouldn't that be serious? Now your son goes and is friends with the other son. Would you really like that?
The problem that's happening here is that Yonatan can see that his father's wrong. His father's trying to kill somebody. I mean, it's, you know, you're at a 5-year-old.
You're on a father-son level.
There's something
called... Now Yonatan didn't believe it. Remember, Yonatan was saying
he didn't believe. No, Yonatan didn't believe, yeah, that the father hated him so much. Yeah. So now he sees it.
I'll go find out if he's really going to kill you or not.
So now we're finding out.
He thinks he's going to prove Shaul innocent.
Even if there's a possibility, he's not doing anything wrong.
We're not arguing that point. We're just explaining Shaul's position. Just explain where Shaul coming from so we can appreciate Shaul's position. That's all.
Okay.
Now Yonasan is stuck in a bind. On the one hand, he doesn't want to outwardly go against his father. On the other hand, he understands that David is a tzaddik. So there's a lot to Yonasan's credit, that his loyalty to David, because that was the emes, that Yonasan could see the emes, and that's a very big virtue on Yonasan's part.
I mean, is a person dishonoring his parent if he knows his parent is going to do something terrible? Like murder somebody, and he does.
You have to stop the parent.
He reports them.
You have to do that. You know, honoring your parents, there are limitations. You know, God comes before parents, so he has to do what's right. But he still has to live with his father too, right? So he's not going to. You'll see. We'll see what his father's going to ask for. He's not going to listen to his father. You'll see what he does.
Yeah, we'll probably get there eventually. But if that was some maligned by all the people. And so tragic, and how come he became such a hero? so to speak.
A hero to who?
David Melech Yisrael.
First of all, that's whoever sang that. Who sings that?
No, but we say
secular Jews who don't know anything.
That's
Hashem. That's Hashem. That's in MS. In MS, he is, but he didn't get. He didn't have good PR. The MS is he's Tzadik Yisod Olam. The MS is Mashiach comes from him. That's the MS. But the Balabatim didn't appreciate it. The masses didn't
wrongly
appreciate it. They blamed him for everything.
Wrongly, though. It's not that he didn't deserve it.
You know, any good rabbi can relate to David HaMelech. Okay? You know, rabbi can do no right. Can do no right. You hear a little bit of Lashon Hara about him? Oh, let's get rid of him. That's the same thing. What, teaching anything different over here? Right? It's the same thing. So, yeah, he's a tzaddik. You know, I guess when he won battles, you know, so the women sang, not the men. Same thing. The women tend to stay a little away from Lashon Hara. So the women sang his praises, the men didn't sing his praises. So, you know, he did not have good PR.
It's part of his challenges.
So, yeah, to still be a tzaddik when no one appreciates you. That's what a Mashiach has to be. No one will appreciate you. Except Yonasan. And that's it. And we'll see. And his good buddy doesn't live very long. Lamed Aleph. So now let's go back to what Shaul, still in the middle of Shaul. Took a little bit longer than anticipated, but I think it's important to appreciate the. So Shaul continues in Lamed Aleph. Ki chol ha-yomim asher ben Yishai chai al adama. As long as ben Yishai lives on the earth, lo sikon ato, you will not be established, umachusecha, and your kingdom will not be established. See, he wants him to be the king. Now, shlach, go, send forth, bring him to me. Ki ben mavet, so he is a person who has a death penalty on his head. So the Malbim explains, what does it mean that all the days that Ben Yishai is alive, he says, even if you will become the king, Yonah's son, I will die and you will take over being the king, but your kingdom will not be strong because he will rebel against you too. Don't you trust him. He's your good friend. You wait and see. Even when I'm gone and you're going to rule, he'll turn against you too. And therefore, send it to me because that's for your benefit. Listen to me, my son. I care about you more than David cares about you. You're falling into a riffraff over here. Bring him to me because he's a person who should die because he's a Marid B'Malchus. He's a rebel against the king, and probably one of the proofs is he hasn't come to this meal now. He wasn't here. He's not supposed to ask you. He's supposed to ask the king. I mean, you know, you're my son, but you're not the one who gives permission. He's using you to go against me? That's not proper. So that's pretty clear. Well, so now, Yonah's son, he's got guts. He's going to defend David right to his father's face. Vayan Yonasan es Shaul Aviv, and Yonasan answers Shaul his father, Vayomer Elav, Lama Yumas, why should he be put to death? Me'asa, what has he done? Lama Gimel. Shaul hears this. Vayotel Shaul es Achanis, Olav Lakoso. Shaul grabs his spear to be ready to throw it at Yonasan. Vayeda Yonasan ki chola hi me'im aviv lo mises David. Now Yonasan knows for a fact, it's finished. From his father. There's no hope. He wants to kill David. And therefore, Lamedalad, Vayokom Yohainasan Meima Shulchan Bachoriyaf. Yonasan gets up from the table in an anger. He's upset. Vlochal Biyomachodesh Hashini Lechem. Interesting why the Navi throws this line in again. Like, this is such a non sequitur. And he didn't eat any bread at the meal. In other words, obviously, he didn't start the meal. It was right before a meal. Again, like, this is really becoming, you see, the Navi is trying to say something here. Yesterday, saying, you know, they were going to have the meal to eat the bread. And now he got up from the meal in a huff. What's this idea? And he didn't eat on the second day the bread. There's something going on there. Right? Ki ne'etzav el David, because he was saddened over David. Ki hichlimu aviv, for his father had embarrassed him. So the Malbim explains that even though the father embarrassed him, In other words, what got Yonasan upset? Was it the fact that his father embarrassed him? His father did embarrass him. He said, you know, you're probably an illegitimate child. You're not my child. These are typical parental responses to children not doing what parents want. You know, you have these ideas. You're not my child. You have these, you're not my child. That's not my child would listen to me. You're not my child.
Son of mine.
You're no son of mine. Your mother probably, you're just like your mother. She fooled around and you're an illegitimate son. Right? So he insulted. But the mom says that's not what saddened him. That wasn't what it was. It was what? He was saddened over that the father wants to kill David. It wasn't about him. It wasn't about him that he just got embarrassed. He was saddened over the fact that David was the one that he realized now David's a marked man. Okay, now, there is a very interesting Gemara that deals with this little part of the story. It's a Gemara in Erechin, and let's read it out for you. Gemara in Erechin quotes the Torah that says, Hocheach tochiach hasamisecha. There's a mitzvah for a person to rebuke another person. Hocheach tochiach, a double expression, which means you try often to rebuke a person, not just once. You keep trying until. The question is, ad heichan toichacha, how far do you go in rebuking? In other words, at what point do you stop rebuking? So the Gemara gives three opinions. Relazer omer ad hako. You rebuke until the person who you're rebuking will hit you. Until it gets to the point where he's going to hit you, then you stop. I don't know if it's Yosef or Yitzchak Omer, at Klal. No, you don't have to go that far, just until the point where he curses you out. Benazay Omer, at Nazifa. No, you only have to do the point where he gets angry at you. To different levels, lower levels. Omer of Nachman bar Yitzchak, Ushlosh to Mikrecha Darshu. And the three of them learn it from one pasuk. Which pasuk is it? These psukim that we're learning right now. Where it says, Vayichar Av Shol B'Yonasan, Shol got angry at Yonasan. Vayomerlan, he said, Ben Navas Hamardus. He says, you're a rebellious son. Whatever the interpretations you said, it was quite insulting. And really, he's cursing him out. Uksivan then says, Vayetel Shol Asachanis Olavakoso. He takes the spear to throw it at him. Solomon Domer Hadaka. So the one that says, you rebuke until the point of being hit. Diksiv, it says, Lahakoso. It says he wanted to hit him. And at that point, okay, that's when he finally stopped. Right? If you're looking in the order of the story, right? That's when he answered the father, and he gives it to him, right? That's number one. Lamanda Amar, I'm sorry, Ad Klola. You do it only until you get cursed. Tichsiv Levosh Techol Levosh Esher Vasiv Echa. It's an embarrassment to you. It's an embarrassment to your mother. That was cursing him out. Until anger, Shol got angry. So now the Gemara asks a question here. So wait a minute. Now let's see if you can be Talmudists over here. Do all three opinions make sense on what we just said? When did Yonasan give up?
After the hitting.
So where do the other two opinions figure in? No, because obviously he didn't stop after his father got angry. He didn't stop after his father cursed him out. He only stopped after his father wanted to kill him. If anything, it's a proof to the third opinion. How do the other two ones have any proof?
Because according to them, he shouldn't have done that last step because that last step brought him almost to kill his son. So they're saying he should have stopped one step sooner.
But
he shouldn't have said, what did he do? According to their opinion, they should. That was proof that he brought him to the point where he almost killed him. He almost killed his own son. So they're saying he should have stopped one step sooner.
Well,
that's what it seems.
Well, the Gemara isn't thinking like you. Nice try.
Okay.
Nice try. But the Gemara is. So Gemara asks, Ulaman Dharma Nazifa, the one that says no to the point of anger. Haksiv Hakov Klola. We see, first of all, no, it won't work. It's okay. It's interesting because it only asks on this rabbi. It doesn't ask on the other two rabbis. We see that he hit him and he cursed him. What about cursing? Yeah. Gemara says, "Shiny Hasam." There, Yonasan was different. The Agav Chavivusa Yasera, the Havabeli Yosainasam, but David, since he really loved him so much, so Maser Nafshetay, he went more than he had to go. In other words, you know, what Yonasan says, you don't learn from that. Because he loved him so much, so he, to defend David, he really pushed the envelope against his father. But other people, you don't have to go that far. So clearly you learn from here, so that's a machlokas, how far do we go? I believe we paskin until the guy's ready to hit you. Let's see. One second. So the chinuch, when the chinuch, now it's very interesting, if you really think about this, I'm just thinking about it now, and I don't have an answer offhand. Where is, very interesting, you could ask a question on this whole Gemara. He says, okay, how far does rebuke go? You know, till he gets angry, till he curses you out, till he wants to hit you. Okay, can you tell me exactly where the words of rebuke of Yonasan begin in this story? Tell me where, which pasuk? Tell me where is he rebuking his father?
He's not.
Well, which pasuk? Which pasuk? No, Lamed Beis. You mean Lamed? Lamed Beis. Vayan Yonasan Eshol Vivim Lav Lama Yumas Me'osa. Isn't that the rebuke? Let's go over the story. Shaul says, where is David?
Right.
He says, well, I gave him permission to go somewhere. Right? Now, Shaul laces into him. He gets angry, A, and then he curses him out.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Yonasan responds. He says, what do you do? And now he wants to kill him. So if Eddie, we should have a question on the Gemara. What's the question? I don't understand the first two opinions. You rebuke somebody until he gets angry at you. Where was Yonasan's rebuke? You rebuke someone until he's ready to curse you out. Where was Yonasan's rebuke? The only opinion that makes any sense is the one that God says until he hits you. Because that's after his rebuke. So what must you say? Gemara knows what it's talking about. What must you say that there was a rebuke in the fact that he gave David permission to go away? That itself has to be a rebuke. In other words, who are you to let him go away from the thing? And more than that, you knew he was a marked man. So, you know, rebuke can have many forms of rebuke. One rebuke is he's telling the father, I let him go to a simcha. And therefore, I'm rebuking you for what you think he's a dead man. So that itself was already strong words. I'm just, that has to be, because otherwise the Gemara doesn't make any sense about those three opinions. So let's just see what the Musar Levim brings out. He says, so he brings down from the Sefer Chinuch, a mitzvah Reish Lamed Tes. He says, from the mitzvah of it is, Shechiv Mitzvotcha Hi Ad Hakol. Sefer Chinuch paskins, like the third opinion, you rebuke until you get hit. Until you get hit. You give him rebuke until it's close to the sinner is going to hit you. You don't have to wait till he hits you, till it's close to hitting you. That's what the Sefer Chinuch says. So he says, you can ask, why don't we learn the Pashto? What is the Gemara saying? Gemara says, how long do you bring until he hits you? Till he hits you. So why does the Sefer Chinuch learns until he'll hit you? Until the point, but not including, why didn't the Sefer Chinuch say it's the simple Pashto of the Gemara says until he actually hits you? So you could say, it's logical. It's logical to say, why should a guy to do a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah saseh, a positive mitzvah, to rebuke somebody. But nobody has to do a mitzvah saseh to the point where he's going to get hit. In other words, it's logic. Logic says, you know, yeah, it means until you get hit, but not to get hit. Since when to just do a mitzvah, do you have to suffer? You know, there are limitations. You know, for example, if you, only so much money you spend on buying a lulav, and that's true. You don't have to make yourself a pauper. So you don't have to get to the point where you're going to get smashed in the head. He says, "Sheregam misha over aleh." Let's say the guy who's sinning. Let's say the guy you're rebuking himself. What kind of punishment is he supposed to get? He says, "Eman isha so bishu monchaguf sherei malchus alzeh." The things you're rebuking a guy for, right? You know, not necessarily comes with lashes, or let's say the guy who's not rebuking. Let's say you don't rebuke. What's the punishment? You don't get lashed. So why does that guy have to get himself hurt? So he says, so there's no place for you to say you have to get it just to fulfill the mitzvah of doing tochacha. So the Sefer Chinuch is saying that there's no mitzvah to wait until you're getting hit. Right? Same thing for to transgress a negative punish, a negative alosa say, there's no nothing to say that you have to get punished for that. Because Adarabba, Yeshonu Klal Acher, Bechol Dover, Oynes Rachmana Pacha. There's another thing, Oynes Rachmana Pacha. If it's beyond your control, the Torah gives you an excuse. So if somebody forces you, so let's say somebody forced you to Navera, you don't get lashed for that. You're Pacha from Malkus. So therefore, what are you saying? You know, you transgressed that you should have rebuked me to the point. You're not obliged to get yourself hurt. So the Sefer Chinuch learns that you don't have to wait to the point of getting hurt. That's his pshita. The Rambam in Hilchos Deah says, he says, V'chein tamid chayiv adam l'chir avera ad sheyikohu hachote v'yom alim shomeh. Rambam disagrees. Rambam says you have to rebuke him until he actually hits you.
But aren't you also causing him to do
that? Doesn't matter. You have to stop him. So from the Rambam, v'mizeh master the posek rak sheshezeh hekalo mamish. Rambam says, up, he has to really hit you. And that's what brings down from the Logos Maimini, the Medrash Tanchuma, Parshas Tazria. They talk about that. They bring proofs of that as well.
That's the conclusion. That's
Remember that famous Gemara where Hashem was going to destroy the Beis Hamikdash and kill all the people. And Hashem says to the Ma'am Chamoves, but the tzaddikim put a little mark on their head and don't kill them. Don't kill them. And the Gemara says it's one of the few places where God wanted to do something and he changed his mind. The prosecuting angel says, why are you not killing the tzaddikim too? He says, why should we kill them? Well, they should have rebuked the people. Right? He says, no, they couldn't rebuke the people. You know they're not going to listen to him. They were rishayim. They were rishayim. They're not going to listen to him. So the prosecuting angel says, yeah, I know that. You know that we're going to listen. But the tzaddikim didn't know that they weren't going to listen. Right? So it brings down that whole Gemara. 1 second. So to produce, it says, and over there it says that they should have rebuked and didn't rebuke. They should have denigrated themselves and embarrassed themselves in rebuking for Hashem's sake. They should have absorbed blows from the Jews in forms of rebuking them. Just like the Nevi'im absorbed blows. Because Yirmiyahu himself got a lot of problems from the Jews from that. So clearly, there's many supports to that, that you gotta go till it comes to blows. Okay. So it's different shot. So now, he ends off, we'll have to continue tomorrow on this last point. Musa Nevi'im asks a question. Now, how does this fit into this story? What proof do we have from this story? Yonah's son, did he wait to get the blow?
Yes, he almost did.
Well, almost, but then he ran out. Well, you'll see in the next pasuk.
So I'll pick up a spear.
He left out. So we'll have to see. All right. Remind me tomorrow. We'll pick up at this point. Yeah. There's one more point from the Musa Nevi'im.
All right. Slight chazara for the last 2 minutes.
This is the main one.